2 seconds. We can get started. Okay. The title of today's talk is The First Seudat Purim. Now, historically, obviously, the first Seudat Purim took place the year after Purim. In a strict halakhic sense, that is certainly true. But we find that there was a proto-Seudat Purim that took place long before that. Look at source 1 on your source sheet. This is from the Sfas Emes on Parshas Miketz, where Yosef, the brothers come back the second time along with Binyamin this time, and Yosef invites them to a meal, which they participate in, and it says, Vayishtu Vayishkaru Imo. They drank and got drunk with him. So look at your first source here. Sfas Emes. Vayishkaru, they got drunk. Humrumaz al Purim. This alludes to Purim. Upnimius elu hadvarim yuvnu lamaskil. And the inner meaning of these words will be understood by the insightful person. Bekavanas chayav ilabasume bepuria ad deloyada. There was the intention of the mitzvah of the person is chayiv to become intoxicated on Purim until he doesn't know the difference between Aror Haman and Boruch Mordechai. Right? Sfas Emes is saying somehow this Seuda, Yosef and his brothers, where they got drunk, somehow they were fulfilling the chiyuv of chayiv inish lebesume beporia ad delo yada. And it's not just Sfas Emes who says this. You find at the beginning of Parshas Miketz also, Reb Tzadok HaKohen says the same idea. He adds a few words. He says that Yosef thought that by rising above the level of Ad Delo Yada, above the level of Das, somehow he would bring his brothers in contact with the point of their origin, the very point where the human neshama touches HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, and thereby fulfill Mechias Amalek. What exactly this means, how exactly this happens, I'm not equipped to explain. But Yosef, what's clear from these two Hasidic sources, is that Yosef considered this Seuda that he was having with his brothers to be a fulfillment of the Seudas Purim, and thereby, by fulfilling this mitzvah properly, one can achieve some degree of Mechias Amalek. My question is simply, what's going on? What does Yosef think of? To say that, let me just say, I seriously doubt that the calendar date was the 14th of Adar, because in the very same pasuk, I'm not going to go into it, there are the text in front of me, the Sifrei Chassidus find an allusion to Chanukah as well. Yosef wanted to fulfill somehow all the Drabanon holidays with his brothers. I don't know, we don't know what date it is. But nevertheless, Yosef thought, now I can fulfill whatever we're meant to get out of Purim. Yosef wanted to get out of that encounter. How? What does it mean? Let me go on a little bit of a tangent. What the Sfas Emes and Reb Tzadok are saying is really very novel. It's not the simple meaning of the text. Why do they say it? On what basis do they say it? So I'll tell you what I think, and I really think I'm right about this. We don't get drunk. Jewish people don't get drunk. There's a Gemara in Pesachim that says that there are three people whom HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves, and one of them is someone who doesn't get drunk. And the reason for that is simple. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us on this earth. We have a mission. We're supposed to accomplish something. In other words, we're supposed to make the right choices. And we're supposed to use our koach habechira. And when a person is drunk, the person can't use their koach habechira. You're saying, if you get drunk, you're telling HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm opting out of my job right now. Right? You have no right to do that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu hates people. So how did we're presuming that Yosef and his brothers were tzaddikim. What possible rationalization could there be for getting drunk at a meal? It's not something you're supposed to do. The only rationalization is once a year there's an exception to the rule. So this must have been the exception to the rule. And then, getting back to our original question, how was this Seuda a fulfillment of Chayev Inish Libesume, the fulfillment of drinking to inebriation at the Seuda's Purim? Okay. So, in order to answer that, let's start by looking at the second source on your sheet. Beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, story of Yosef and his brothers. V'Yisrael ahav es Yosef mikol banov, ki ben zekunim hu lo. Yisrael loved Yosef more than the rest of his sons because the simple pshat is he was a son of his old age. Right? Parents tend naturally to have more affection for the children who are born when they're getting old. It's I'm not saying there's justification for it, but it's a natural tendency. Yosef was born when his father was already older, so that led to more affection, at least greater display of affection, on his father's part towards him, and that was a mistake on Yaakov's part. He engendered jealousy among the other brothers. That's simple pshat, but look at source number three. The Baal HaTurim comments on that pasuk. Zikunim Bigamatria Raz. The word zikunim, which means old age. The gematria is raz, which means secret or mystery. Shemasar lo razei Torah. Because this alludes to the idea that Yaakov gave over to Yosef the mysteries of the Torah. There were certain elements of Torah wisdom that Yaakov imparted to Yosef and not to the other brothers. And on one level, that was the reason why Yaakov Avinu loved Yosef more than all his brothers. This is not pshat, this is drash. But it's a dimension of the pasuk. Let's go on. Zikunim, the word zikunim, notarikon, it's an acrostic, a Rashi Tevos. Zeroim kodeshim noshim yeshuos moed. All right, the Mishnah, which is the outline of the entire Torah Shavuot, is composed of six orders, right? So, zikunim, this five-letter word, it's the Rosh Tevos, an acrostic, of five out of the six orders of the Mishnah. The Zion stands for Zeroyim. Zeroyim seeds, that's the part of the Mishnah that deals with agricultural laws. Kodshim, the part of the Mishnah, the section of the Mishnah that deals with the service in the Beis HaMikdash. Noshim, the order of the Mishnah that deals with the laws concerning marriage and divorce. Yeshuos, literally salvations, that is a euphemism. There is one order of the Mishnah called Nezikin, literally damages, and that deals with financial law. Now, the Chazal are so sensitive to language that they never want to mention anything negative directly if they can. You will find, not only in Chazal, but even in modern day Sfarim, you see it in the Chazon Ish and other people, they won't even use the word ra if they can get away with saying lo tov. Right? You don't want to say anything bad directly. So there's an ancient euphemism, and we'll see the origin of it in a minute. Instead of saying Nezikin, damages, which right away has a bad connotation, you say Yeshuos, salvations. Okay? That is the euphemism for the order of Nezikin, which deals with monetary law. And then finally, what does he have here? Moed. Moed, the Chagim. The order of the Mishnah deals with the Chagim. Okay? So Zikunim deals with five out of the six orders in the Mishnah. And the Baal HaTurim is telling us that this is one of the reasons why Yaakov favored Yosef, loved Yosef more than his brothers. It's because he learned these five orders of Mishnayos with him. And the obvious question is... Pardon me? Somebody had
a... What about the last one?
What about the last one? I mean, if you're going to learn Mishnayos with your kid, learn all of Mishnah, right? Learn Seder Taharos. There's another Seder of Mishnayos. The laws that they're not really practical today, may they become practical, but here we may know, but the laws that apply when a person or an object is Tomei or Tahor. right? There are lots of restrictions. When the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, that's going to become very practical, right? And there's a whole large section of the Mishnah devoted to it, and it appears that Yaakov Avinu didn't study it with Yosef. Why not? So, the Aderas, that's a Rosh HaTevis too, Rabbi Avraham David Rabinovitz Ta'omim, who was Rav Kook's father-in-law, he wrote a Perush on the Baal HaTurim, and he raises this question, and he brings an answer from Sefer Megala Amukos, a very early Ashkenazi Sefer Kabbalah, and the Megala Amukos says that Yaakov Avinu didn't teach Yosef Seder Taharos because Taharos is something that you have to learn on your own. Leaves it at that. Okay, so let me add something here. When this Baal HaTurim says that Yaakov Avinu taught Yosef five of the six orders of the Mishnah, I don't have proof of what I'm saying now, but the way I understand it is, it doesn't mean, at least certainly not necessarily, it doesn't necessarily mean that here you have on the shelves, you have your the sets of Mishnayos, it's a fixed text, we've been learning the same text for almost 2,000 years, right? It doesn't mean that he taught Yosef the exact text of the Mishnah that he had. The text of the Mishnah is the exterior of the Mishnah. The Mishnah, like the Torah Shebiksav, contains in it infinite depth and infinite mystical secrets, secrets of human nature. I choose to believe that Yaakov Avinu taught Yosef the essential wisdom of the Mishnah rather than the text of the Mishnah itself. So when it says that you've got to learn Taharos by yourself, I don't think that means that you're supposed to figure out the text of Mishnayos Taharos by yourself. How can you figure out a text? But the lessons in life that Taharos should impart to you, the way the knowledge of Taharos changes you as a human being, makes you more holy, makes you more pure, that Yosef has to discover on his own. Okay, so that's why Yaakov didn't teach it to him. Something you got to figure out on your own. Now, let me make two assumptions. First, let me make an assumption that Yosef was a Talmid Chacham and a good student and someone who had the capacity to learn Taharos on his own if he so chose, and he succeeded. I'm assuming Yosef could handle that. First assumption. Second assumption, knowing the story of Yosef, all of his experiences in Mitzrayim, if I had to choose one point in the story of Yosef where I would say he finally learned what Tara, purity, really means, if I had to take an educated guess, I'd say it happened when he had his trial with Potiphar's wife and he succeeded, right? Then he said he could, I mean, I won't say pat himself on the back, but he could understand what purity really is. Okay, so if I'm right about that, now let me make another assumption, or at least ask as a question. Possibly, if Yosef actually learned Seder Taharos on his own, this might be hinted at somewhere in the Torah, in the text of the Torah. And if it is hinted at in the text of the Torah, and I'm correct in my assumption that it occurred after the incident with Potiphar's wife, I should find that hint somewhere later on in the story, right? There should be, if the Torah is going to tell me Yosef now knows the entire Mishnah, if there is such a hint, it should appear after the story of Yosef and Potiphar's wife. Look at source number 4. This is written in Sefer Ohev Yisrael by Rav Avram Yeshua Heschel of Apta, the Apter Tzaddik, one of the great Hasidic Rebbes, and his Sefer, more than most Sefer Hasidus, is tinged with Kabbalah. So I'll read to you, just, you know, we've got 2.5 lines here. Don't expect to understand every detail, but you'll pick up as much as is necessary. The pasuk says that after Paro installed Yosef as ruler of Egypt, he gave him all the trappings of royalty. So one of the things he did was he gave him royal garments. So look at this quotation here. Vayalbesh oso bigdei sheish. He dressed him in linen garments. Rotzelamar, that means to say, Sheromez Bazak, this alludes to the fact, Shehakadosh Baruch Hu Hilbish Es Yosef Bevav Midos Hakadoshos. Hashem clothed Yosef with the six holy attributes. I don't know what the six holy attributes are, but the word sheish, which on the pshat level here means linen, also means six. God clothed Yosef with six, already six orders in the Mishnah, but he hasn't said that yet. But let's go further. Dehu iskashrusa dekula. These six holy traits are what connects everything, canal, as he has said before. And then, what's the other thing that Paro did to show that Yosef was now royalty? He goes on and quotes the pasuk, Vayarkev oso b'merkeves hamishneh. On the simple level, that means Paro had Yosef ride in the second chariot, the chariot of the assistant to the king. Rotsa lomar, what that means to say on the level of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was doing for Yosef, Beshis Sidrei Mishnah, Hashem made Yosef the rider, so to speak, of the six orders of the Mishnah. Sod Kololus HaTorah Shel Peh, the secret of the entirety of the oral Torah. Here you got it. Big Day Sheish, garments of six, riding the Mishnah. By this point, after the incident with Potiphar's wife, Yosef doesn't just know five seders of Mishnah, Yosef has gotten the sixth order of the Mishnah. And this idea is said not just in the Ohev Yisroel, I found it in other Sifrei Chassidus as well. I'll just name them, the Degel Machane Ephraim by the Baal Shem Tov's grandson, and the Sfas Emes. They both, in their own way, take this pasuk and say it indicates that somehow, at this point, Yosef became a master of the entire Mishnah, which is to say the entire Torah Sheval Peh. Now, I found in this pasuk another hint to the idea that by this time, Yosef knew the entire Mishnah. Because there are four things mentioned in this pasuk that Paro did for Yosef to show, you know, when he became ruler. He gave him royal garments. He gave him a royal chariot. It says at the end of the pasuk that he gave him a wife, Osnas Bas Potipherah. But the pasuk also says that Paro gave him a special name. That name is Tzafnas Paneach, which, if you interpret the words, that means he who can decipher that which is cryptic. Okay? Now listen to this. The word Sofnas, Tzadik Pei, Nun Taf, in Gematria adds up to 620, which is the Gematria of the word Taharos. Another hint that Yosef, at this point, had learned Seder Taharos. And we're not through. Because Paneach, Gematria of Paneach, equals the gematria of Zekunim. Zekunim are the other five orders of the Mishnah. Now you've got Sofnas, which is Taharos, plus Paneach, which are the other five orders of the Mishnah. There you've got an allusion to the fact that at this point, Yosef got Taharos, and now he's a master of the entire Mishnah. And let me just add one detail here. When you work with gematrias, you're allowed to be off by one. Now that sounds like a very contrived rule. It sounds like somebody was trying really hard and couldn't quite get it. So it's no, it really works. And there's even a pasuk in the Torah that tells you that it works that way. There's a pasuk where Yaakov Avinu is talking to Yosef on his deathbed, well, close to his deathbed, in Parshas Vayechi. And he says, Ephraim v'Umanasha, Kiruvain v'Shimon Yiruli. right? They're going to be Ephraim and Manasseh. Your sons are going to be on the level of my own sons, right? And the Sforim and Kedoshim point out, this is already the Rishonim point out, Ephraim and Manasseh in Gematria equals Reuven v'Shimon, but they're off by one. So if you're off by one, Ephraim and Manasseh in Gematria equals Reuven v'Shimon. Now, why does that work? I couldn't tell you. But let me tell you a little bit more about how it works. What does it mean you're off by one? That's really imprecise. The rule really means is you have the numerical value of the letters. That's the simple gematria. But the entirety of the word, the combination of the letters, can also be used as a unit. That's what it means you can be off by one. You can't be off by one. You have to be equal, but you have the option of using the word itself as a unit to get to your equality between the numbers. In this case, I can understand it. In this case, to say that Paneach equals Zekunim, I think Paneach is the one that has one more. Yeah, it does. Paneach is 208 and Zekunim is 207, right? What is that one more? I'll tell you what the one more is. The unity of the word. I'll explain a little. The Chazon Ish, in his correspondence, he's writing a letter to somebody and he says a sentence that if it's taken out of context, if it's misunderstood, it can be the most discouraging thing that a student in yeshiva can hear. The Chazon Ish writes, and he says black on white, this is almost a direct quote. He says, unless you understand all of Shas, you don't understand any of Shas. Oh my gosh, oh my gosh. I mean, what's the point? I mean, I know I'm not going to understand all of Shas. And, you know, much more than 99% of the people who are learning Gemara know that they're not going to understand all of Shas. So what? So give up the whole enterprise? Chas v'shalom. What the Chazon Ish means is to understand Shas like he understood Shas, for that you have to know all Shas. And I'll explain it to you just a little bit and you'll see it makes a lot of sense. You can learn bits and pieces of a thing, and the bits and pieces can make sense. I can learn even, let's talk about Shas, let's talk about Chumash. Right? I can learn the story of Yosef and not know anything else. And I know something. I know something important. Like, I know it pretty clearly too. But you're missing an important dimension of what you're learning. The wisdom of the Torah is itself an entirety. It's a reflection of reality itself. All of Torah is the blueprint of reality. If you understand all of Torah, then every part of Torah, you can see not only what it is in and of itself as a fraction of the reality, you can see how it affects, how it is necessary for the entirety of Torah, and how the entirety of Torah puts it in perspective. You see how it fits into the big picture. For that, you need to know the whole thing. And that's the Im HaKolel. The unity, the combination of the letters, is itself one more unit. Till if you only learn 5/6 of Mishnayos, you know less than 5/6 of Mishnayos. You know 5/6 of the text, 5/6 of the information. But how that 5/6 fits into the big picture, you don't know that until you know the whole big picture. So that's that extra unit. Sofnas Paneach is once you know Taros, it sheds a whole new light on the other five orders as well. And that's that extra one unit in the Gematria. But what we have here now is that Yosef, by this time, knows Seder Taharos and knows all of Mishnah. Now, there are some more allusions to the idea that Yosef has learned Seder Taharos by now. You know, in Lashon HaKodesh, we have lots of words for knowledge, and they all denote different kinds of knowledge. Chochma, Bina, Das, Haskel, there are others, right? And you can all translate them as understanding and wisdom and stuff, and these are just you know, the English words are not the real counterparts of the Hebrew words. The Hebrew words mean specific types of cognition. Now, there are different definitions that are given, specific definitions given among the Sfarim HaKadoshim, but one way of looking at things, and I think this is in Rishim Shmuel Hirsch, the way he looks at it, and others, not just he. Let's talk about Deya and Bina, Das and Tavuna, right? It's easier to start from Bina. Bina is Lashon Binyan, building. Bina is associative knowledge. It is seeing what things have in common, how they relate to each other, how units form a structure. Building, Bina. Deya is sort of the opposite of that. It's analytic knowledge. Dividing things, taking things apart, looking at the distinct unit and understanding what gives it its distinct identity. What makes this this and not something else? Looking at the differences between things. And there's a strong source for this definition of Deya, because when we say Atochan Antanu after Shabbat, when you say the first Tefillah, Ma'ariv, on Saturday night, right, you add Havdalah in the Shemona Esrei, and we say it in the bracha of Atachonein L'Adam Das. And the Yushalmi asks, where should you say Havdalah in Shemona Esrei? And the Gemara says, say it in the bracha of Deya, Atachonein L'Adam Das, ki im ein Deya Havdalah minayin. If you don't have Deya, how can you distinguish between things? Deya is that capacity that leads us to distinguish between things. And Bina shows the connections between things. And Bina is the domain of the Baal Teshuva. Let me explain to you why. Baal Teshuva, by the way, we use it in colloquial, spoken Jewish English. We say Baal Teshuva is somebody who's come to an observant life later on, after his childhood years, without having a traditional Jewish education. That's what we say, Baal Teshuva. That's acceptable. That's the way we mean it, and that's nothing wrong with that. But it's not the way it is used in the Sfarim HaKadoshim. A Baal Teshuva is any Jew who has, chas v'shalom, committed a sin and properly repented for that sin. That is the real, the official meaning of Baal Teshuva, right? So the Sfarim HaKadoshim say that Bina is the domain of the Baal Teshuva, because if you really do Teshuva of the highest degree, Teshuva me'ahava, Teshuva motivated by no self-interest, purely out of love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Gemara says something amazing, which I'm not going to talk about, I'm not going to explain it here, but the Gemara says that the Aveira that you did Teshuva for becomes a Zechus for you. It's counted to your credit. Somehow, through Teshuva, you can get to the point where really deep down inside, Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad, everything is a unity. Everything is expression of divinity. We don't experience things that way. By us, there are clear divisions between Osir and Mutter, between Tomei and Tahor. But someone who is a Baal Teshuva Me'ahava, a Baal Teshuva of the highest degree, can see that everything is associated. Everything is there aren't differences. Everything is an expression of Hashem Echad Ushemo Echad. That's Binyan, constructing, connecting everything, right? That is, who's the classic Baal Teshuva among the brothers? Yehuda. Yehuda is the classic. He's the person. I mean, the Torah portrays him as he certainly sinned with Yosef, and he sinned with Tamar. But he says tzadka imeni, right? He recognizes he can come to terms. He can handle his averus and correct his averus. He is the paradigm of a Baal Teshuva. And Yosef, on the other hand, he is Yosef Hatzadik. He's the only one of the brothers, well, he and Binyamin, the two children of Rachel, are the only ones of the brothers who get the title Hatzadik, because they are not the people who mess up by doing averus and then succeed in fixing things up. No. Yosef is the one, his greatness is he resists temptation. He doesn't do the avera in the first place. He knows the difference between right and wrong. That's very clear to him. Clearer than it is to Yehuda. Right? And he knows, Ad Kan, I'm not even going to get close to crossing the line. Right? He watches himself. Right? And he has a tendency, he's a tzaddik gamur. Perfect, since Adam HaRishon, there's no such thing as perfect. But he's as perfect as you can get. Right? And that's because he is characterized by Deya. Always seeing the difference. Right and wrong never get blurred with Yosef. It's clear as day. He divides. And the Ari says that when Yosef went to Mitzrayim, don't ask me what he means by this, but he says it's Golus Hadas, the exile of Das. Yosef had Das. And when is this expressed in Chumash? I mean, the Ari is one thing. When do we see from the text of the Torah that Yosef had Das? Well, after Yosef interprets Paro's dream, Paro's first words to him are Acharei hodiacho Hashem eskol zos ein navon v'chacham kamocha. After hodiacho, after Hashem gave you the Das to know all this, you're the most wise and insightful man in Mitzrayim. So the Torah at that point says that Yosef has Das. Okay, what does that have to do with Taros? Now look at source number 5. Amar Reish Lakish, a Gemara in Maseches Shabbos. My dechsev, what is one of the meanings of that which is written in the Navi Yeshaya, a pasuk here? Vahaya emunasitecha chosen yeshuos vachmas vadas. I'll just translate the pasuk. I don't know the context that the Navi says this in, but the pasuk is, it'll be that the faith that you demonstrate in your times will give you chosen, a strength for salvation. It'll give you wisdom and knowledge. Okay. Now, but how does Reish Lakish interpret that pasuk? Emunas, faith, zeh seder zeroyim. That's the order of zeroyim in the Mishnah. And the Rashi there explains, because the farmer, you can be a great farmer and do your agricultural work better than anybody. But, and this is true in all vocations, but especially in farming, you realize that the final result is in the Kadosh Baruch Hu's hands. I can do all the work perfectly, but if there's no rainfall, I'm not going to get anything. Right? It's very clear. If you're a farmer, you have to live with emunah. Right? That's why emunas alludes to Seder Zeroyim, the agricultural order of the Mishnah. Itecha, your times, zeh Seder Moed. That's the section of the Mishnah that deals with the holidays, special times. Chosen, strength, zeh Seder Noshim. That is the order of the Mishnah that deals with the laws of marriage. And Rashi says that the strength of the Jewish people lies in the family, the relationships between the husband, wife, the children. All right? So that's why that order is called strength, is alluded to by the word strength, I should say, in this pasuk. Yeshuos, here's the source. Yeshuos, salvations, zeh seder nezikin. This is the order of damages, and Rashi says it's called Yeshuos by the pasuk, not just for euphemism, we use it for euphemism, but if you know the laws of what you're supposed to do, what your obligations are to protect people against you from being harmed by you, it's going to save you from hurting people and getting yourself into trouble. Okay? Chochmas, wisdom, zeh seder kodshim. I don't remember how Rashi explained that one, but here's the one that we're interested in. V'da'as, remember Yosef had da'as, zeh seder taharos. This is Seder Taharos. I don't know if Rashi says this, but I think it's a very appropriate for Seder Taharos, because like it says in Chumash, Seder Taharos, what's it about? Lahavdil bein hatomei ubein hatahor. Knowing the main sub-practical issue that that occupies you in the realm of Taros is knowing the difference between the pure and the impure. And knowing the difference between things, that's Da'as. And Yosef has Da'as. Paro said, Acharei Hodiach Lo Hashem, Paro says that Yosef has Da'as. Again, after the incident with Potiphar's wife. Okay, so now I'm going to get to the question that I began with. What is Yosef doing all of a sudden, making a Sudas Purim with his brothers and getting them drunk? And the Sifrei Chassidus say, oh, he thought this was going to be Sudas Purim and he's going to wipe out a Molech. Why? And he didn't do this the first time they were there, right? He does it the second time they were there. What's going on here? What is the nature of this Sa'uda? Let me tell you what I think it is. Yosef tells the man in charge, and when the brothers come back and they set out the nice offering, the mincha for him, he says, tell these men who just came from the land of Canaan, ki iti yochlu ha'anoshim batzoharayim. With me, these men will dine, but Tzoharayim means at noon. Okay? Now, in every place, and I mean every place, in Chumash, where the word Tzoharayim, which is correctly translated as noon, appears, every place except one, Targum Onkelos translates Tzoharayim with the Aramaic word Tihara. Tet Yud Hey Resh Aleph. Obviously, Tihara is an Aramaic version of the word Tahara, purity, right? And linguistically, the Tet and the Tzadik, they're both made with the tongue at the roof of your mouth. Those letters like that get interchanged. So the Tet and Tzadik, Tzoharayim, the Tzadik elides into a Tes in Aramaic. Tzoharayim is related to the word tahara, right? I said every place except one, Targum Onkelos translates it that way. It's this pasuk. In this pasuk, Onkelos translates Tzoharayim, ki iti yochlu ha'anashim bat Tzoharayim, because with me the men are going to eat at noon. Tzoharayim, Onkelos translates it as b'sheruta. Sheruta means dinner, okay? I will suggest, and I'm going to bring a proof for it in a moment, that, you know, Onkelos doesn't always translate. Onkelos explains and paraphrases also. 95% of the time he's translating, 5% of the time he's paraphrasing. I want to suggest that Onkelos here is paraphrasing and not translating. Tzoharayim always means noon. It's always tihara, purity. And noon is purity because that's when the day is at its greatest light and you have the greatest purity of vision, okay? Here, Onkelos in context, it meant dinner. So Onkelos used the word dinner, but it's not translating, it's explaining. And my proof is, if you look at the other Targum on Chumash, Targum Yonason ben Uziel, he takes ki iti yochlu ha'anashim b'tzoharayim, because with me the men will eat at Tzoharayim. He translates it not as sheruta, but as sheruta de tihara, the meal of noon, or the meal of purity. Now, let me tell you what I think is going on. Yosef, he was a person, he suffered a lot in those 22 years in exile, right? But he took advantage of the suffering. He learned from his suffering, and the nature of his knowledge was the wisdom of Seder Taharos. And when he invited his brothers for this meal, the Sheruta de Tahara, the meal of purity, I am suggesting Yosef HaTzadik was making the first, not Sudas Purim only, the first Siyum Mishnayos. He just finished Seder Taharos, and he wants to make the Sheruta de Tahara, the meal of Taharos, the meal of completion of the Mishnah. And he's inviting his brothers because, listen to this, Taharos. What's the word that the Pasuk in Yeshaya used for Taharos? Das. Right? Taharos equals das. There's an equation there. He says, my brothers, Binyamin too, we're all of Klal Yisrael, basically, the next generation, right? Our father's still there, but we're the entirety of the tribes of Israel. I am going to share with you my wisdom of Das. You didn't get this at our father's house. I know, my father teaches us, I've graduated that school. He probably taught you the five Siddurim, right? I finished Mishnayos. I did it on my own, right? And I'm making a Siyum. And at this Siyum, you are going to partake of my wisdom because I have something you don't have. I have Das. You have a lot. You have Zakunim, those five orders of the Mishnah, you've got a lot. But you don't have Das, right? And once you get to Das, you know where I'm going to take you? I'm going to take you to the next step. Ad Delo Yada. In order to get Ad Delo Yada, to get beyond Das, you have to go up all the rungs of the ladder, right? We're going to take two steps at this Suda. You're going to get Das from me, and once you have Das, I'm going to push you even higher. Ad Delo Yada. I'm going to take you to levels of the truth that are completely inapprehensible by the normal human mind. And that's why we get drunk. We blot out our minds. It's beyond rational, right? I'm going to take you there. But first, we have to master everything that is rational, and then we get to the next step. And that's what the Sfas Emes and Rav Tzadok are talking about. That he wanted through this Suda, to reach to the point that we touch a little bit, in everybody in their own way, by fulfilling Livsume Ad Delo Yada on Purim. Ad Delo Yada doesn't mean you don't know, it means you go beyond knowing. That's what Yosef wanted to do with his brothers. That was his rationale, Vayishtu Vayishkaru Imo, just like on Purim. But now I've got a problem. And let me introduce you to the problem with a little bit of information. Part of Seder Taharos is Maseches Pora. It deals with the laws of the Pora Aduma, the red cow that was burned, and its ashes are essential for the process of purifying somebody who's Tameh Meis, somebody who has become Tameh through contact with a corpse. Okay. Now, the laws of the Pora Aduma appear in Parshas Chukas, Zos Chukas HaTorah. We translate it, this is the statute of the Torah. But what a chukah is, as Rashi on the spot tells us, it's a mitzvah for which there is no humanly comprehensible rationale. Other mitzvahs, some of the mitzvahs, the rationale is obvious. Some of the mitzvahs, the rationale is not so obvious, but for Pora Aduma, it's not only that it's not obvious, you're just not going to get it. Even Shlomo Melech couldn't figure it out. Hashem knows. We trust him. We're not saying this is pointless. We're not saying there's no logic to it, but we're saying we're just not going to get it. But we do it anyhow. Okay. Now, remember, Yaakov gave Yosef a homework assignment. He said, I'm teaching you five orders of the Mishnah, but there's one order... I skipped steps. Excuse me. Now, in Maseches Pora, if you examine Maseches Pora, there is one Tana who is quoted far, far more than any of the other Tanoim. And that is Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, one of Rabbi Akiva's Rebbes, one of the greatest of the Tanoim, the one who is a student of Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, and he's described as a Bor Sid, a cistern that doesn't lose a drop. One of my Rebbes, Rav David Tzvi Eliach, in one of his Sforim, he writes, it had to be Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, Rabbi Eliezer the Great, who is the expert in the laws of Pora Aduma. I mean, there are even the Midrashim that say, and we don't know what this means, they have HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying over in Shemayim, laws of Pora Aduma in the name of Rabbi Eliezer. I don't know what it means, but it's something very special about Rabbi Eliezer. That much is clear, right? And he had to be the one. Why? Because any other law of the Torah, if you're holy enough and brilliant enough, you could figure it out from the rest, from what you know. You can arrive at it through reasoning. But Parah Aduma, you'll never arrive at through reasoning. Rabbi Eliezer's mission, we see this in many places. He's this cistern that doesn't lose a drop. His mission in life was to amass all the information of the Torah Sheba'al Peh and be able to pass it down through Mesorah to Klal Yisrael. He wasn't, I'm not going to say he wasn't a creative genius in his own way, I'm sure he was, and there's evidence that he was, but even Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, when he's talking about his students, there's another student, Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch, who he says, oh, he's a Mayan HaMisgaver, he's an overpowering fountain, just a fountain of new ideas, a creative talent. That's not Rabbi Eliezer's greatest, strongest point. He is, amasses the information, a cistern that doesn't lose a drop, and passes it down to the next generation. He had to be the one to be the master of the laws of Parah Aduma, because you cannot arrive at those laws through anything but the Mesorah. You have to be told those laws. You can't figure them out. And the master of Mesorah, the master of the oral tradition, is Rabbi Eliezer. So now comes my question. How could Yaakov Avinu give Yosef HaTzadik Seder Taharos for homework? You know, Taharos, figure out for yourself. Taharos includes Parah Aduma. Parah Aduma, a human mind, cannot figure out on its own. Impossible. Yaakov Avinu seems to be giving Yosef an impossible task. But he succeeded. How could that be? That's my question. So to answer that question, let's look at source number 6 on your sheet. Also, towards the end of Vayeshav, in the story of Sebastian, in the story of Yosef and Potiphar's wife, it says, Yosef went to the house on the day when everybody, all the Egyptians were in their temple, and Potiphar's wife decided to stay home to seduce Yosef. And it says, Yosef went back to the house, lasos malachto, to do his work. So Rashi on that comment, on that pasuk, source 6, he brings down a machlokas in the Gemara. Rav Ushmuel. There's a machlokas between two of the Amoroyim, Rav and Shmuel. Chad omar malachto mamash. One says, you take his work, the word malachto, his work, you take it literally. Yosef had better things to do than to be in an idolatrous temple. He had work to do, right? He went home to do work when everybody else was doing their avodah zarah. The Chad omar, and the other opinion holds, lasos tzrachov ima. He went back, he intended to commit an avera with Potiphar's wife. What stopped him? Ella, but an image of his father's face appeared to him, and that stopped him from committing the Avera, as stated in Maseches Sota. Alright, so according to one opinion, Yosef went back to the house with bad intentions, but he saw an image of his father's face, and that stopped him from committing Avera. I'm going to say something now which is going to sound pretty wild, but you'll give me a couple minutes, I'm going to try to support my point, and this is going to be the answer to the question. How could Yosef have possibly figured out the entire Seder Taharos? The laws of the Parah, which are part of Seder Taharos, they don't make any sense. You don't have the mental tools to figure them out. How could it be? I'm going to suggest the following. And again, have a little patience with me. Yosef, when he went back to the house, he saw the image of his father's face. I am going to suggest that when he saw Yaakov's face, Yaakov's image taught him Seder Taharos. Rashi didn't say that. Where do you have the right to say that? Okay. Now I'm going to try to make my case. Look at source number 7, which is Rashi's source. Vatispaseu bevigdole mor. This is the pasuk about Potiphar's wife. She grabbed him by his garment, saying, all right, that's the quotation that the Gemara is going to discuss. Ba'osah Sho'ah, at that time, when Paro's wife was grabbing onto Yosef, Basa Diukno Sho'aviv, the face of his father, the image of his father's face came, V'nirasah Lo Bachalon, and appeared to Yosef through the window. Amar Lo, Yaakov said to him, Yosef, Asidin Achecho Sheikasvu Al Avnei Ephod. Your brothers are going to have their names inscribed on the stones of the ephod. You know, one of the garments of the Kohen Gadol was this apron-like thing that had shoulder straps. And on the shoulders, you had these two jewels, big jewels, the Avnei Shoham. And on each of the Avnei Shoham were engraved six of the names of the tribes of Israel. So Yaakov says, your brothers are going to have their names written on the stones of the Shoham. And you're supposed to be among them. Do you want your name to be erased from among them? And you won't be called someone who frequents prostitutes? That phrase, by the way, comes from a pasuk in Mishlei, which we're going to see in a moment. But this was Yaakov. This is how Yaakov got Yosef, according to the opinion that he had intentions to commit the Avera, right? This is how he got him to stop. He says, you know, you have something important in store. Your name, along with that of those of your brothers, are going to be engraved on the ephod of the Kohen Gadol. But if you fail now, your name's not going to be there. And instead, you're going to get this very honorable title as Roaz Zonos, someone who goes to prostitutes, right? And that shook Yosef up, and it got him to do the right thing. Okay. Let me ask a little question here. I'm not going to say it's a real big question, but it's a legitimate question. Of all the disgraces that Yosef could have suffered had he committed the Avera, why Davka having his name removed from those stones? I mean, just one possible alternative. On the Choshen also, on the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, you had 12 stones, each with the name of one of the tribes. Yosef's stone could have disappeared from there. If you think about it, there are thousands of ways Yosef could have been disgraced. Why Davka not having his name on the stones of the ephod? Okay, let's look at the next source. So Yaakov told Yosef, if you do the wrong thing now, you're going to be called a Roaz Zonos, someone who frequents prostitutes. Right, you can take that at face value, it makes a lot of sense in context, right? Okay? But the Gemara in Eruvin has a midrashic take on this pasuk. Listen to this. Mai dichsiv, what is one of the meanings of the pasuk in Mishlei? Vroez zonos yovad hon, he who frequents prostitutes will lose a fortune. Gemara is not suggesting that what's coming up is the simple meaning of the pasuk, but one dimension of the pasuk is Kol Ha'omer, whoever says Shmua Zo Na'eh V'Zo Eino Na'eh, this Shmua, this piece of Torah, this one is nice and this one isn't nice, Ma'aved Hona Shel Torah, loses the fortune of Torah. Okay, the word Zonos, plural for Zona, appears a few times in Tanakh. And it's always with the first vav missing, right? This pasuk is the only place where it's written full with both vavs in the word. So it lends itself to the interpretation. Take the word zonos, the zion vav at the beginning of the word, view it as a whole word. Zo no'eh. This one is nice. So one of the lessons of the pasuk is, when you learn Torah, you can't pick and choose what you prefer to keep. I like this part of the Torah. This part, not so much. This is nice. This is not nice. No, it's a package deal. There are parts you might be more interested in learning than others. That's perfectly fine. But to say one part is more binding than others, right? Then you're a Roaz Zonos, and you lose the fortune of Torah. So remember, what did Yaakov Avinu say to Yosef when, according to the Gemara, not according to me, according to the Gemara, when Yosef went back home with bad intentions? So what did Yaakov Avinu tell him? If you do the wrong thing now, your name is going to be erased from the stones of the ephod. And what title are you going to get? Roezonos. So you can take that on the simple level. Someone who goes to prostitutes, that fine, it fits the story. But you can take this on the level of this Gemara. Yaakov Avinu is telling Yosef, you're going to be one of these people who says, you know, there are parts of the Torah I really like. 5 out of the 6 orders of the Mishnah, boy, I'm all in favor of Zakunim. 5 out of 6. But there's one part of the Torah, Taharos, being pure, that's not for me. That's a Roezonos. Zonoeh, this part of the Torah is nice, this part of the Torah isn't nice, you don't want to learn Seder Taharos. I'm beginning to make a case for myself, right? I'm not done yet. Now, I asked you, why of all things, all disgraces, Yosef should suffer if he were to fail, of all things, your name won't be on the ephod. I'll tell you what I found in a sefer on the Haggadah Shel Pesach, sefer Yad Mitzvah, something, Yad Mitzvah, whatever, it doesn't matter the name of the title of the sefer. It was written by Rav Yitzchak Isaac Chaver, a Lithuanian Kabbalist who lived about 160, 170 years ago. He says that on each of the stones of the ephod, there were 6 names of tribes. Why were there 6 names on each of the 2 stones? Each a set of 6 corresponds to the 6 orders of the Mishnah. Ah, Yosef, you're rejecting Seder Taharos? You're not going to be represented in the 6 stones that represent the entirety of the Mishnah. That's why, Davka, you're going to suffer the indignity of not being there engraved on the stones of the ephod. Now, finally, look back in source number 6, where Rashi paraphrases the Gemara. So, the way Rashi puts it, what stopped Yosef from committing the Avera? Look in source number 6, the last second line. Elo shenireis lo demus dukno shel aviv. There appeared to him the image of the face of his father. Demus dukno. Those are words that aren't in the Gemara. They're in Rashi. It's a paraphrase of the Gemara. Now let you in on a secret. Take away the vav from the word diukno, and look at the word demus diukan. Don't bother taking out your calculator. I'll do the gematria for you. Demus diukan, gematria 620, taharos. At that encounter, Yaakov Avinu taught Yosef seder taharos, and that vav at the end. The Musdiukno, that Vav is the 6 orders of the Mishnah. Have a happy Purim.